Hello, everyone. We are going to get started momentarily. In the meantime, we will ask our presenters to mute their phones. And I will ask for confirmation through the chat box that you can all hear me. Okay, sounds like you can hear me. Great. Get started momentarily. Okay, welcome everyone to the Six Cameras Coalition Funding Webinar Series. Today we are going to be talking about funding for restoration on private lands. There have been a couple changes to the original itinerary that I'm just going to mention right now. Firstly, unfortunately, Bill Noonan, one of our presenters from the Partners for Fish and Wildlife, was not able to join us. But we will have Chris Randall, who's also from Partners for Fish and Wildlife, from a different region. She will be covering their program and some of the opportunities that they offer. To get started today, I'm going to provide you with an overview of some of the web conferencing ground rules. Please note that all of you who are not presenting will be muted during the course of the presentation. At the end, once the presentations have concluded, we will then provide an opportunity for everyone to ask questions. And I will instruct you as to how to do that then. Please, as you are listening to the presentations and questions occur to you, please think to write those down. And if you would, try and direct them at one of the presenters so that we can have an orderly question and answer session. In lieu of a sign-in sheet, we are asking that you please enter your name and your organization into the chat box, which it appears most of you have figured out how to use. It helps us figure out who's on the call and determine what kind of information the presenters can provide. If you, in addition to your name, would indicate who you work for or work with, that would be great. Also, if you're hearing my voice through both the computer and the phone, you'll want to mute you'll want to mute the computer so that you do not have any type of feedback. When you are asking questions, please mention that your name, your affiliation, and the method for asking questions will be to press star 1. So if you do, when that time comes, if you're ready to ask a question, that's how you will do it, by pressing star 1 on your phone. And then at the end of the presentations, we'll ask that you complete a evaluation survey, and that can be accessed through the link at the bottom of this page, which I will send out once the presentations have concluded. Many of you have probably participated in some of our other webinars. This series is continuing. We have future webinars that will be focused on funding for restoration in Utah, funding for restoration in Arizona, and common pitfalls of grant writing and fundraising. The funding for restoration in Utah webinar will be taking place on May 9th, and I'll be sending out information about that webinar and how to access that and the times in the next couple weeks. We're always taking suggestions for future webinars, so if you have those or you have ideas about information that would be useful to you, please feel free to contact me at khjesperson@tamarascoalition.org. Okay, so we're going to get started with our first presentation by Don Jackson. I'm going to pull that up just momentarily. Don Jackson is the Assistant State Conservationist for Programs for the Colorado Natural Resource Conservation Service. She has statewide responsibility for the Environmental Quality Incentive Program and the Conservation Security / Stewardship Program, as well as the Wildlife Habitat Incentive Program and the Watershed Reserve Farm and Ranchland Protection Programs. So she is responsible for most of the programs that NRCS offers in the state of Colorado. She's going to provide us with an overview of how those programs work. Don, if you would unmute your phone and let me know that you are there.
I'm here.
Okay, great. Take it away.
Okay, thank you. So as Kristen said, I oversee most of the conservation programs in Colorado. These programs that I'm going to discuss with you today, though, are available nationwide. They do have, you know, sometimes within those programs, there's different targeted focuses, but for the most part, the information that I'm going to cover would be applicable to definitely most of the western states and most of the states in the lower 48. So the program that I wanted to start with is by far probably our largest program, and that's the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, or EQIP. This is a voluntary program, and it provides financial and technical assistance to agricultural producers. We enter into contracts. Typically, those contracts are on average 2 to 3 years in length, but they can go up to 10 years. And producers that are eligible are owners of land that is agricultural or forest production, or persons who are engaged in livestock, agricultural, or forest production on those lands. And that have, one of the other things is we do have to have a natural resource concern on that land that we can treat in order for that applicant to be eligible to participate in the program. So when we say we enter into contracts, we provide with those landowners, we go and do face-to-face planning work. As I said, identifying that resource concern and identifying the practices that would help treat that concern that's on their land. They help select, obviously, those practices that they can or are able to do, and then we write those into a contract. And so we pay a rate of payment for each practice. Typically, those are based on an average cost, but they are just kind of a flat rate that we offer for whatever that particular component or practice is. And those payments are given directly to whoever our contract participants are, which is either the operator or the landowner that's in control of that land. So some of the limitations, when we talk about the work that we can do related to riparian areas or watershed treatment, the payments that we're allowed to make under EQIP are cannot exceed $300,000 to any particular participant in a six-year period. And so, for large projects, you could be limited just by that financial amount. But that is a per-person limitation. The other thing with large group projects, the land that's eligible under EQIP has to be land that is used for agricultural production, and then it has to be a person who's engaged, a person or an entity that is engaged in agricultural or forest production. So with some of the larger projects where you have the large laterals sometimes, or even riparian corridors, where it requires multiple people to be participating so that you can get that treatment, those have to be individually contracted with those eligible producers, unless there is an entity that qualifies as an agricultural producer that can be the one participant on the contract. We often do have that as a limitation. Sometimes that land, either for some reasons, is not considered eligible agricultural land, or some of the participants are not designated agricultural producers. So that often has some limitations, but on most private land, we can assist with the EQIP program. Sometimes funding levels also impact the ability to work on projects, but within EQIP, one of the benefits is that there's a lot of flexibility for targeting of those funds. And some states, like Colorado, encourage groups, especially local working groups, to submit proposals where they identify a targeted, often geographic area where they want to see a commitment of funds to achieve real outcomes. As opposed to if you just kind of throw those funds out there and you have what we refer to as maybe a shotgun approach. So we really do like to target those funds, and EQIP allows us to do that. And so if you are working on a project and you have an interest in, you know, getting multiple landowners and partners together, EQIP is often a program that can help you get some targeted funds specific for that project. Some other opportunities that are available under EQIP include the AWEP program, the AgWire Enhancement Program, and then we also have some initiatives. The one that I was going to focus on today was the National Water Quality Initiative, and then there's other initiatives and targeted conservation projects. So to give you just a little bit more detail on the Agricultural Water Enhancement Program, or AWEP, we operate, again, since this falls under the rules of EQIP, the dollars are given out, or the financial assistance is provided through individual contracts with eligible landowners or operators in order to implement the practices. But this is one of those programs where NRCS sends out often a request for proposals, and we ask for partners to let us know of projects that they have, again, you know, had a group project that they have other people that are willing to commit time and dollars to see this project be successful. And in those cases, we enter into partnerships agreements aside from the individual program contracts, but we have a partner agreement with those organizations or entities that are involved in the same project. And then that gives us the mechanism to devote those funds for the landowners and producers within that project area to submit applications for the individual program contracts related to that project. And so AWEP is actually not a grant program. Again, it has to be, we give those funds through individual contracts with landowners and entities. But the with the partners, we enter into a multi-year agreement, and that agreement actually lines out kind of what everybody is bringing to that project, but it does not provide the mechanism to transfer any funds to the partners that are helping with that group or that group project. The National Water Quality Initiative, this is actually a, it is on a national level where states have identified targeted watersheds where there's an identified water quality concern, and we work to bring partners together and, again, enter into partnership agreements where that's appropriate so that we can then work with those landowners and farmers along or within that watershed to educate them on the best practices available to help treat those water quality concerns, and then also provide through this initiative under EQIP the financial assistance to help give them some of those funds so they can implement those practices on their land. Typically, each state has designated between 2 to 3 watersheds, targeted watersheds that they're working on. 2012 was the first year of that initiative, and they're looking at continuing that initiative into fiscal year 2013. So that is kind of the EQIP program, a very broad general overview of the EQIP program. And then I wanted to talk to you about the Wildlife Habitat Incentive Program, or WIP. WIP looks very much like our EQIP program. It's just that the overall program has a focus on improving wildlife habitat, developing and improving that wildlife habitat, whereas EQIP really takes in all resource concerns, whether it be soil, air, plant, animal, energy. WIP really focuses on wildlife habitats. And again, we enter into contracts up to 10 years in length. And again, we can provide financial and technical assistance. The technical assistance that we provide through these programs, I just wanted to clarify, it's usually through what we call technical service providers, who actually go out and help do the planning and practice design work that would typically be done by NRCS. And so this just gives us another avenue if we don't have NRCS folks who have time or someone knows of a technical service provider to get that, that producer can go to that tech service provider, and it allows us to still help them pay for that assistance to get that design and planning work done at no cost to them or very little cost to them. So the priorities of the WIP program are to promote restoration of declining or important native fish and wildlife habitats, to restore, develop, or enhance those habitats to benefit including at-risk species, reduce the impacts of any invasive species on those fish and wildlife habitats, and to improve those important aquatic wildlife habitats and for those species, as well as migration corridors and other corridors for wildlife. Within the WIP program, they kind of have another I don't want to use the term initiative, but it's kind of a program within a program. And that's called Working Lands for Wildlife. Again, this was rolled out in 2012, and it's a partnership between NRCS and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And they, within this Working Lands for Wildlife project, they have identified seven specific wildlife species whose decline they feel like can be reversed or that will also benefit other species that have similar habitat needs. Within Colorado, we have three species that were part of this program, and those are the greater and Gunnison sage grouse, the lesser prairie chicken, and the southwestern willow flycatcher. And so through this program, again, we enter into individual contracts with producers or landowners that are willing to implement practices that benefit these species. Through this program, one of the caveats is that if the producers work through this program and they agree to maintain those practices and the management of those practices that benefits those species, there's an element of certainty that's awarded to those producers to just help kind of give them some assurances against regulation, or if they have, some incidental take of those species associated with some of those practices, there's more certainty to help those producers feel comfortable in that they're in partnership trying to help improve habitat for that species without feeling, maybe shy, or that they don't want to have themselves come forward because they're afraid of this regulation. It kind of helps remove that barrier so that people, we hope, are more willing to step forward and be proactive in the habitat improvements and the recovery of those species. So now I'm going to get into some of the easement programs the NRCS office offers. The first of these, probably again by far one of our larger easement programs, is the Farm and Ranch Land Protection Program, or FRPP. Through this easement program, we work with different organizations or land trust entities to acquire easements that protect productive farm and ranch lands and keep them in agricultural use. And also as part of that, we help protect any conservation values that are associated with that land. As part of this program, basically those land trust organizations or whoever else we enter into with actually hold the easements, and then NRCS provides up to 50% of the fair market value as a match for acquisition of those easements. Those are perpetual easements. And then the second program that we have for easements is the Wetland Reserve Program, or WRP. And again, this offers the opportunity to protect, restore, and enhance wetlands. We do this through either 30-year or perpetual easements. And through this, they receive financial compensation, again, for letting us place that easement on their land. For the perpetual, we typically pay 100% of the geographic area rate caps that are established based on area-wide market analysis. And so it should be very close to fair market value. For the 30-year easement, we provide 75% of that geographic area rate. Then to further protect and restore those wetlands, we offer restoration funds as part of the easement agreements under WRP. And through that, we can do put practices on that, those easement lands that help enhance those wetlands or if there is that restoration or protection needed. As part of that program, riparian areas are also eligible, especially those that link wetlands together under this program. One of the other programs that I wanted to bring to everyone's attention, this isn't necessarily one that we all deal with, but at the national level, we have the Conservation Partnership Program. And so NRCS offers, again, technical assistance funds wherever we have like organizations who are interested in helping us further or facilitate getting conservation on the ground, we match funds with theirs, often to help put staff on the ground, then to work with those private landowners or operators to develop those plans, identify where conservation work is needed, and then to help them implement that conservation work. And one of the primary examples of that is on, is with the National Fish and Wildlife Federation. They actually have announced an RFP that's closed as of this point, where they were asking for other partners to, or solicitation of proposals, where we could have that kind of partnership effort to deliver technical assistance to private landowners and operators so that we could further everyone's desired outcomes of more conservation on the land. So, I wanted to just give access or show you some websites that you can go to get more information on our conservation programs. Within USDA, we have that national website at www.usda.gov. NRCS also has their own website on a national basis that you can see. And at that level, they also include, as I said, a lot of those targeted initiatives that are available on a nationwide basis. And then, of course, each state has their own website where you can go to look at what their particular focus or emphasis and opportunities are for conservation programs. And so with that, I'm done with my portion of the presentation.
Dawn, thank you so much. Great. So as you just heard, Dawn provided a nice overview of the NRCS programs and the types of activities that they will support and fund on private land. Now we're going to have Ken Morgan, who is the Private Lands Program Coordinator for Colorado Parks and Wildlife, speak about some of their programs and their private lands program, as well as how they've been able to utilize NRCS funds on the ground as a state agency. So he's going to provide some great examples of how they're thinking innovatively about NRCS programs. Ken Morgan, as the Private Lands Program Manager, he manages and coordinates species conservation programs across CPW as it relates to private lands habitat, and he coordinates CPW species conservation specialists to facilitate and implement species conservation priorities with private landowners. He also serves as the official CPW Farm Bill Program representative to public and private interests at the local, state, and national level. So he's clearly an expert in these issues. Ken, are you? Have you unmuted your phone?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Take it away.
Okay, well, I'll ask you to visualize with me the PowerPoint presentation. I guess we can't get up here, but we'll just real quickly go through it. It's probably due to the number of award-winning photographs that were included in the presentation.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, but we were able to pull up your presentation, so you you can use that.
I'm not seeing it on my screen.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
No.
Okay, well, if you have it in front of you on your computer, I can forward it for you. You can tell me when to move the slides.
Great. So you have my title slide?
I believe I have it up for hopefully everyone else can see it as well. I apologize, we were having some technical difficulties uploading Ken's presentation, but it appears everyone else can see it. So
great.
Ken, you can just tell me when to move the slides. You can just say next, and I will do it for you.
Onward through the fog. Thanks.
Okay,
Next slide.
How about that, everyone?
Well, the first slide describes our habitat conservation efforts, and that they encompass a wide range of all programs. Our two categories include the acquisition of habitat, which is both through easement and fee title, those funds coming from Great Outdoors Colorado and other partnering funds within the conservation community. The NGOs that do easements and that type of thing. And we have targeted that over the last 10 years specifically and toward species of conservation risk. And we also conduct stewardship and development of habitat. Next slide, please. Within our wildlife branch and terrestrial section, we do have a habitat unit, which includes our wetlands coordinator, myself, private lands program manager, the plains grassland coordinator, sagebrush steppe mountain shrub coordinator, pinyon juniper desert shrub, and the Colorado Natural Area Program and Stewardship Program coordinators. And with that, we cover all of the, we have specialists that cover all of the biomes within our state. Next slide, please. Under wetland and riparian conservation, within Colorado, we are technically a desert, and those wetland riparian areas comprise only 2% of the land area, but it's used by 75% of our wildlife species within the state. The wetland program began in 1997 with a $4.4 million GOCO Legacy Grant. The goals of the program are waterfowl, public hunting, and at-risk species conservation. And those techniques and management principles are guided by our strategic plan, which emphasizes adaptive management and has been awarded in several instances. Next slide, please. The accomplishments of the program include 280,000 acres cumulative habitat restoration. In 2010 and 2011, we had 49 projects encompassing 9,800 acres, $1.2 million in Colorado Parks and Wildlife funding, and $1.4 million in port partner funding. Next slide, please. Our wetlands program partners include the Partners for Fish and Wildlife, Ducks Unlimited, Rocky Mountain Bird Observatory. And in addition to that, Wetland Ecological Services Team and Colorado Youth Corps Association in the lower Colorado River Valley. Next slide, please. Under our restoration enhancement grants, we typically have 30 to 60 active projects. 50% of them are on state wildlife areas. So it's half public, half private. Typical annual funding is around $1.2 million, and within that you can see the breakout. Most of you, I think, can see the breakout of the funding that we utilized for that, $700,000 coming from Great Outdoors Colorado. For those who aren't familiar with it, that is our lottery. Those are lottery funds that we are allocated. $350,000 in game cash and capital construction, and $150,000 in waterfowl stamps. And the next RFA actually is out at this point, so that's sooner than later, I guess you'd say. Next slide, please. We've given you a couple examples of what some of our wetland opportunities have been. The first one of our flagships recently is the Andrick Ponds State Wildlife Area, which is on the lower South Platte. And the objective was to create wetlands for wildlife habitat and recharge, water augmentation and recharge. And the species benefiting are the obvious players, waterfowl and water birds and frogs. And our partner was V3 Company of Colorado Incorporated. Next slide, please. We also do some major manipulation of invasive species within this project. This Chico Creek project, as you can see from the slide, was thoroughly choked by Russian olive. And the objective of this project was to remove that and to remove the exotic tamarisk and Russian olive and revegetating with native species. And the species that are benefited are both cavity nesting birds, neotrops, and migrant songbirds. And the partners were Chico Basin Ranch and State Land Board, NRCS, and Rocky Mountain Bird Observatory. Next slide, please. Private lands programs, we've already, Don did a very admirable job of covering the programs that we utilize through Farm Bill. That allow us to do many of these projects. Next slide, please. I've given you some photo examples of what some of the projects look like. Forest management, to the untrained eye, you might be gasping at that, but that is a significant beetle kill area that we've been doing beetle kill mitigation and dead standing tree removal through some of those project opportunities. Grazing management is simply showing water well development and the solar powered well recharge. Next slide, please. Gunnison sage grouse and brood rearing habitat and CRP mid contract management. And we've spent an awful lot of time on CRP mid contract management, and I can get into that at great length if need be, but suffice it to say that CRP requires mid-contract management by the terms of the contractual agreement, and our objectives are to do techniques and management applications that will better benefit wildlife species, and that is to diminish monocultural stands, provide some soil breakup, to add forbs and legumes to the seed mix, as well as some degree of barren ground. Next slide, please. Conservation of native fish is a high priority in our state. Most of the native fish that we have been working on the Eastern Plains include all of our Eastern Plains native fishes, which are fish that most folks can't identify. They're just very small minnow-type fish. A lot of people call them bait. At any rate, these fish have evolved through usage of ephemeral pools and drought, wet cycles, et cetera, and we spent a great deal of time trying to recover those areas to maintain those species. Of course, we've already talked about the Lesser Prairie Chicken Initiative. It's a candidate species for listing, currently under review by Fish and Wildlife Service. Next slide, please. Wetland improvement on private lands. One of our main focus has been northern leopard frog and acquisition of conservation easements through the WRP programs. Next slide. CRP enhancement, voluntary public access funding. VPA, voluntary public access funding, is a program that has existed through Farm Bill, whereas we have the opportunity to augment CRP contracts to allow for public access for upland bird hunting within the state. Next slide, please. This slide is the crux of my presentation and some of what Don was talking about. Through partnering with Natural Resources Conservation Service, Rocky Mountain Bird Observatory, Pheasants Forever, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Partners for Fish and Wildlife programs, we have been able to implement and place on the ground 13 private lands wildlife biologists whose specific responsibility is to provide outreach to private landowners for delivery of the conservation title of the Farm Bill. And there, every one of these folks that are listed here are wildlife biologists specifically, and have become in their own right very much experts on those areas and species that we have designated as being priority species through the Farm Bill program. Next slide, please. The species focus that we've been working on include Gunnison sage grouse, all species of prairie dogs. We have three species of prairie dogs within our state, blacktail, whitetail, and Gunnison's. Gunnison's prairie dog being a species of high concern. Boreal toad, lesser prairie chicken, burrowing owl, ferruginous hawk, greater sage grouse, and as I already defined, our plains native fishes, swift fox, and mountain plover. As of yesterday, I'm proud to announce that we were successful in getting our black-footed ferret reintroduction bill out of the House Ag Committee. It should be heard on the floor of the House today and then sent to the governor. So hopefully in the near future we'll be adding black-footed ferret to this list of pictures as well. We continue to identify our opportunities to partner with all organizations and private landowners through private landowner workshops, private landowner outreach, conducting all levels of research on private lands, working cooperatively with those producers. Lower right-hand corner, you can see that we are still very much focused on tamarisk removal and all opportunities to go with that. Next slide, please. I'm describing some of the biome areas that we are applying some of these opportunities. Plains grassland, Farm Bill programs, we're utilizing Pheasant Habitat Improvement Program, which is the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Program, the Lesser Prairie Chicken Habitat Improvement Program, walk-in access, Lesser Prairie Chicken Left Grazing Exposures, and habitat treatment test plots which are giving us some better opportunities for native seeding research on specific plots of land, and that does include riparian, riparian restoration. Next slide, please. The programs on the grasslands include the NRCS programs, FSA, which is, of course, CRP, and our partnerships with NGOs. Next slide. This gives you an idea of what some of our pheasant and lesser prairie chicken incentive programs look like. This happens to be a center pivot corner, which is providing that midgrass component for brood rearing and nesting capabilities of those birds. Next slide. I already discussed mid-contract management, but this slide gives you some indication of what we're looking for when you see a robust component of forbs within mixed grasses within some barren ground composition. Next slide. And we do continuous consultation in grass mixes that are suitable for wildlife. Most of these I'm showing you, of course, are upland component, but we do, again, work on those riparian areas. Most are ephemeral in this type of a landscape, but we're working on all components of that. Next slide, please. This gives you an idea of what we're talking about as treatment for mid-contract management and gives you a better close-up view of the type of condition that we are trying to achieve, not only for the huntable species, but for any grassland species that requires structure of this sort, such as grasshopper, sparrow, et cetera. Next slide. Forest restoration and fuel treatment. We've already kind of talked about beetle kill opportunities or beetle kill situations. But in addition to that, we are working stridently toward removal of pinyon juniper and creating migration corridors for all types of wildlife. Pinyon juniper encroachment is a pretty huge issue in several parts of our state. Next slide, please. This just gives you an idea of what pinyon juniper removal looks like. All of a sudden, it goes back to native sage, that's being in the southwest portion of the state. Next slide. Little snake, southwest, it's a state wildlife area riparian burn. This is back in the good old days when we still had enough moisture to conduct burns, but we still prefer fire as a management tool when possible. It gives many, many desired results if conducted properly. Next slide, please. Several, again, this depicts what our woody vegetation clearing opportunities look like, which provide a more non-monocultural aspect for a whole wide diverse litany of wildlife out there. Next slide, please. Aquatic habitat restoration enhancement. Again, we are working on all native species and conservation habitat for native amphibians, working through both Farm Bill programs, private funding, NGOs, and of course our own team of researchers to work on various programs that will enhance the habitats. Next slide, please. Nope, that looks like we're at the end of the show here. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Again, we'll be taking questions after all of the presentations have concluded. Thanks a lot, Ken. I think that was a great overview of the wide array of different types of applications and programs that can take place on private land. Next, I'm going to pull up Chris Randall's presentation. Chris, if you would unmute yourself, and I'm going to let you know that we were able to upload the combined presentation, so you will be able to share information about both Arizona and Colorado's programs.
Okay, sounds good.
And let me give you a quick introduction. Chris Randall is the state coordinator of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Partners for Fish and Wildlife program in Arizona. She's been in that position since 2005. She's currently the acting regional coordinator for Region 2, which includes New Mexico, Oklahoma, Texas, and Arizona. And prior to working at the service, she was with the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality Non-Point Source Program, where she was the the riparian and wetland coordinator and worked on Section 319 grant programs. All right. Take it away, Chris. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Kristen. All right. So I'm going to talk about the Partners for Fish and Wildlife Program. And Bill Noonan from Colorado, he is the state coordinator for that state, couldn't be here today, and I've been able to take the slides that he prepared and integrate it into my presentation. Since it's on partners, it will give you a good perspective on what each state does, and I'm thinking that Colorado is probably very similar to what is done in Arizona and in Region 2. So I'm going to give an overview of what the Partners Program is, what it is, how the projects are selected, and examples of projects that have been funded. So first of all, Partners for Fish and Wildlife, we provide technical and financial assistance to willing private landowners who want to improve fish and wildlife habitat on their property. And please note, it's a voluntary program, so we go to landowners or that are asking for us to come to their ranch or their property, take a look at their habitat, and help them develop a project. It's the mission of the Fish and Wildlife Service to work with others to conserve and protect, enhance fish and wildlife and plants in their habitats for the continuing benefit of the American people. And the Partners Program is definitely in line with that mission. We've recognized the importance of working on private land since half of the listed species have 80% of their habitat on private lands. This particular statistic is nationwide. It's not just specific to the Southwest, but we know that there's a lot of private lands in the Southwest. And it is important to work with the folks out there to be able to do any kind of restoration for our listed species. So the program principles is that it's voluntary, incentive-based, and that we provide that financial assistance as well as technical assistance. We provide benefits to the federal trust species, and that includes listed species, waterfowl, and migratory birds. We can work on private lands and tribal lands. We cannot work on federal lands or state lands. We like to leverage our funding through partnerships, and what we like to see in a project is a combination of both an environmental, economic, and social benefits. And one of our mantras that we have in partners is keeping common species common. We want to try to do what we can to prevent a species from having to be listed. Let's do what we can now and be proactive. So some of the nuts and bolts of the program, it was initiated back in 1987. It's a reimbursable program in that the landowner, once they have an agreement with us, does the work, pays the contractor to do whatever it is that they're looking at doing, and then provides the receipts to the Fish and Wildlife Service for reimbursement. We provide financial and technical support. We can provide up to $25,000 per project. That amount can be increased. It depends on the number of acres and the species benefited. We look for a cost share with the landowner, and that shows a commitment on the part of the landowner to maintain that project and a commitment to doing the project. The project must have an on-the-ground component. We do not fund monitoring. We don't fund research. It's moving dirt, basically. When we write an agreement, it's for 10 years. We like to do projects and development in coordination with substantial involvement from the partners biologists out in the field. We work directly with the landowners. And we focus our projects on priorities and geographic focus areas that have been identified in each of the regional strategic plans. And what Partners is not, is we're not a traditional grant program.
And what I mean by that is we don't solicit our projects through a request for proposal or an RFP. And how we do ask for our proposals, even though there is a grants.gov site which lists all the funding programs that are available through the federal government, Partners is listed there in one of the funding opportunities. And if you were to click to that site, it talks about the Partners program and that, it for this year's funding, it's available now, and we're working on projects, and you need to contact the state coordinator for your project that you're looking at doing to see if it could be funded this year or maybe it's next year. And here's the website to be able to find who is your state contact person, and clicking on that, you can then find out who you need to talk to about doing a project. So regarding who's eligible, it's ranchers, interested public, tribal members, schools, nonprofits or non-governmental organizations, land trusts. And depending on how much funding's available, each region receives an allocation of funding, and then that funding is divided amongst the states. In Region 2, we have four states of Arizona, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. And Oklahoma and Texas has a lot more private land than either Arizona or New Mexico. So the majority of our funding does go to Texas and Oklahoma because they are going to have more of the private lands component in their projects. So for FY 2013, there is a reduction due to the effects of the sequestration, and it's likely that in Region 2 we're going to have at least a 15% reduction in the amount of money that we have available for projects, and that doesn't set well with us. We wish we had more money. So for that, we'd like everybody to feel our pain. We would like to do that, do more projects, but maybe what we can do is provide technical assistance and maybe not do some of the on-the-ground work, but provide some of the design and planning phases of a project. So when do you submit a project? You can submit any time in the year to the partners person and say, this is my project, we need help in designing it, what do you think? And you can go back and forth in your design and planning until you finally got it honed down to what it is you really want to do, how much it's really going to cost. We like to have a very sharp pencil at the time when we write our agreement, because if we can get our budget as fine-tuned as we can, that means we may have more money to be able to fund additional projects. So some of the keys in selecting our projects is we look at the benefits to federal trust species, emphasis on species at risk. We look at the benefits to a National Fish and Wildlife Service, the wildlife refuge system. And if it's adjacent to a refuge, we know that working on that land will help benefit what is happening on the refuge. We also look at areas that are located within identified focus areas, and I'll talk about that in a minute. We also look at projects that are self-sustainable in that they are something that is not going to require a lot of maintenance and upkeep and a lot of operation and maintenance. So in Region 2, we've selected our focus areas, and these are areas that have special emphasis on our funding. Because we are limited in how much money we receive to do the on-the-ground work, we need to be very efficient in where we spend our money. And in Arizona, we've identified these as our focus areas, and I was in the development team on trying to identify these focus areas when we did it back in 2008. We looked at where do we have listed species, where do we have private lands, and where do we have watershed groups that can help put the projects on the ground and working with the landowners. All of those kinds of things came into play as we developed what areas to work in. And this is the focus areas that are identified for Colorado. I pulled this off of the Colorado website, so if you want more information, you can go to Bill's website, and you could type in Colorado Partners for Fish and Wildlife, and it'll take you to their webpage, and it shows their focus areas. So we looked, as I said, for the focus areas in Arizona, non-federal lands. We also had an emphasis on riparian and grassland habitats because we know that those are definitely in decline, and that's where we have a majority of our listed species and species at risk. We also looked at existing conservation plans, such as those that have been done by the Arizona Game and Fish Department and the Nature Conservancy. So when a project is selected for funding, the landowner is going to sign a cooperative agreement, and the term of that agreement is for 10 years. And what that means is the landowner is going to agree to maintain that project for that length of time. If for some reason, let's say in year five, he decides that he really needs to use that area for something else, then we need to have a discussion because we have spent federal dollars, which are taxpayers' dollars, and now he wants to take it away. We need to have some sort of a reimbursement of what those funds are. The landowner, with the agreement, will agree to use the government financial system, and then there are reporting requirements. So in the reporting requirements, and this will be true for just about any federal program, and I'm not sure if NRCS has something similar, but I know BLM and BOR has these kinds of requirements. Of additional, they have to do annual financial reporting, annual performance reporting. There'll be contact with the partner's biologist because we want to know how things are going, so those contacts can happen as frequent as they need depending on what the project is. We also like to get monitoring of the project, and we ask the landowner to do photo monitoring to be able to provide us a before and after kind of scope of what's going on. So now I'm going to go through some examples of projects that have been done. On this slide, the upper left is a erosion control structure where it shows the one rock dams that have been put into an ephemeral wash where you're able to decrease the flow of the water and you can get some sediment built up behind it and get some nice grass built up there, which also provides habitat. To the right of that is a project where we did some mesquite removal, and it looks like we need to go back in there and do some more. We've got quite a problem with the mesquite invasion into the grasslands in Arizona, along with pinyon juniper. So much like what Ken was saying, we have quite an encroachment of invasive species in some of our habitats. We've got a seed drill on that lower right, and then some riparian work that we always love doing in the lower right left corner. So as far as riparian enhancement, one of the projects we've recently done is working with the Verde Watershed Restoration Coalition, and there we did some removal of invasive species. We did a cut, stump, and spray of herbicide. We also provided some elimination of vehicular access, and there was an education aspect trying to tell the landowners in the area that we can work with them, and the Verde group is the entity to work with them to be able to provide this kind of work where it's needed. On this one, it says that the stream restoration on Gila River, and there we removed a dike and we recontoured stream banks and removed invasive species, and we also provided improved habitat for southwestern willow flycatchers. The upper left shows that stream embankment before the project, and the lower left is what we've done to be able to address that terrible cut bank on that particular aspect of the project. And then over on the right side is the project about 4 months after the erosion cloth was put down, and we're getting vegetation coming back. A lot of it's weedy, but right now it's showing that we're getting some vegetation stabilization. We know that the seed bank is there. So for this project, we provided both a financial and technical assistance. We were able to help in the acquisition of their 404 permit because we did the surveys, and they had to be done very quickly because they had the need to be able to do their project so they didn't lose out on additional funding. So it was really great that the partners was able to step up and be a part of this project. We're working with that landowner to provide a safe harbor agreement, and the landowner is understanding more on what is the Endangered Species Act, and I think it's really spoke volumes on being able to work with private landowners in that area of the state. So our take-home message on these kinds of projects is start working with your federal and state agencies early in the planning process, especially when you want to know what the timing is for doing your constructions and areas to avoid. We also work with youth. We do outdoor classrooms. And we did a project in Douglas High School where we built a ranarium, and that was a grow-out area for Chiricahua leopard frog. The frogs are able to go from an egg mass, metamorph into adults, and then those adults are then captured and translocated to other areas. And so it's providing that jumpstart program for the Chiricahua leopard frogs, really helping in their recovery. From Colorado, Bill sent me these. So in Colorado, they do upland restoration and wetland restoration, stream and riparian restoration, and fish passage. And this one is the picture of, I'm sorry, the top of it's cut off, so I'm thinking it was a fish passage type of project where they were able to reduce the non-natives coming into the upper portion of that stream. So here's a restored reservoir that the state is using as a grow out for the Colorado River cutthroat trout. And I think this was a construction of that project. And here is a project where they worked in the stream, and you can see the difference by having that fence exclosure of being able to have increased riparian vegetation maintained along this stream. On this one, they created a new meandering channel. You can see that off to the left. The South Park, some more slides of that showing the channelized stream. The, again, more of that stream restoration. And this is another post-project photo. Here's a stream restoration project that they did for the Rio Grande Chub. This was about a year and a half since the start of the project. And within 3 months, they got quite a nice vegetation being reestablished. So the blue arrow is a point of reference. So they did some riparian fencing for the recruitment of the willow and cottonwood. And you can see just a few months later that they're getting that component back into that stream system. And this is another picture of some more fish work that they've done. And this is an example of riparian fencing they've done. They've done tamarisk and Russian olive removal projects. And here are the guys out there doing the cutting of, looks like tamarisk. So in Region 6, here is their website, and provides his contact information. And in Colorado, they do a lot of work with other groups. That's something very important within the Partners Program is that we want to leverage our dollars, but we also want to collaborate with other agencies. So we can all work together. And there's this quote from Aldo Leopold, which I think is very key to the Partners Program in managing private lands, is what we need to do to be able to manage wildlife abundance. So in Arizona, this is just what we've done since we initiated the program in 1992. This is our partner staff. We have three people in Arizona, and there's our three people and our contact information. And my contact information. And with that, I turn it over to Kristen for questions.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you for presenting both yours and Bill's programs. I appreciate you taking that responsibility on. So that was a lot of information, everyone. And so if you have questions, you can press star one on your phone, and I will answer them one by one. I also would ask that you take the time to copy this link into your browser and fill out an evaluation survey. In the meantime, I did have a couple questions myself, and this is sort of for all of the presenters. And I wonder, I think one of the issues that we see with restoration on private lands is that it can be piecemeal, or rather property by property. So I wonder how your programs address the desire or need for a landscape scale or watershed scale approach, and if there are initiatives that you're taking to try and think about those outside of just one landowner by landowner. And any of you who have a response can feel free to address that.
Well, this is Ken Morgan. We, interestingly enough, Phyllis Phillips, our state conservationist, asked the Wildlife Subcommittee of the State Technical Committee to develop a programmatic list of those focus areas that where we would like to best focus those limited conservation dollars through Farm Bill in our state, which is what we have done, and we just presented that to the State Technical Committee meeting the day before yesterday, and that was the whole objective of that exercise, was to target our opportunities and our work toward those areas that would provide a larger landscape opportunity, as well as connectivity to other projects, as well as incorporating techniques and habitat improvement that would benefit a wide litany of species, instead of just doing little postage stamp projects throughout the state.
And Kristen, this is Dawn. I'm going to add to that just a little bit. You know, I think that we really view our programs as kind of tools in our toolbox. And so on a planning level, we are definitely looking at those things that are on a landscape scale and then using those tools to actually accomplish that. And so kind of with our targeted conservation proposals that I mentioned earlier, what Ken described is very much like what we are trying to do, but then also, you know, for reasons other than wildlife, but asking people to look on that landscape scale, identify where they have a lot of interested participants, and then letting us know about that project and all the partnerships they've developed so that we can use those tools, those conservation programs, as they best fit to help implement and get that conservation actually achieved and on the ground.
Great, thank you. And so one sort of a follow-up question is, with Chris, was that you? Did you have something to add?
No, I got something. It's not on this subject.
Oh, okay. I was just going to mention that for those organizations that are on the call, as opposed to private landowners themselves, is there an opportunity for agencies and organizations to participate in that state technical committee process, the NRCS state technical committee process?
Very definitely. Yeah, if your organization or you don't get an invitation to attend, those state technical committee meetings are open to everyone. And so just contact myself or someone else within NRCS to have yourself added to that. And, you know, probably even more importantly for those organizations is to work on a local level as well with the conservation districts and the other partners that are closer to the land so that they can help identify and really work with those landowners and operators so that they understand what everyone's trying to come together and achieve. And so through that locally led process is where we really do like to see that start instead of being a top-down driven project. And so, you know, again, if organizations don't have access or don't know how to contact those local groups, let us know and we will definitely try to help put you in contact with those groups so that you can be a part of that as well as on a state tech committee level.
Great. Thank you. It looks like we don't have any questions from our audience yet. Chris, you had something to add?
I was just going to ask Dawn on the NRCS programs. You talked a little bit about it in EQIP on who was eligible for your funding. Who's eligible for the WIP funding? Do you have to be a producer?
I'm going to have to go back and look on that. There are some more latitude under the WIP program for, there's a different definition. It doesn't have to be just an agricultural producer. I would have to refresh my memory, though. I haven't looked at that just recently,
okay.
But I can get you that information.
This is Kristen again. I do have one more question about how either the NRCS or CPW or partners programs do outreach. I know that the landowners that participate in these programs, it's a voluntary program, but I wonder if you have outreach programs for reaching out to them or making them understand kind of what the resources you have are and how they're available and any kind of mechanisms that you use to accomplish that.
Who do you want to go first?
Well, you can go ahead, Chris.
Okay. Yeah, I think outreach is very key, and where we can, we will participate in watershed groups and going to their meetings. We also participate within the Natural Resource Conservation District meetings, the state technical committee meetings where we can be able to connect with landowners. And oftentimes partners, the information on our projects is by word of mouth and by people that have participated in the program and had a good experience. And also we do what we can in educating people within the schools and doing projects, doing outdoor classroom projects. That's always been a really good way for us to do outreach.
Ken or Don, do you have any responses?
No, this is Ken. As I stated in my presentation, one of the primary responsibilities of our private lands wildlife biologists are to do personal contacts with landowners and or landowner workshops. Specifically, more recently, we have specifically been doing workshops that are driven toward the special initiatives that we've been undertaking, the sage-grouse special initiative, lesser prairie chicken special initiative. We'll be conducting several meetings in the San Luis Valley on southwestern willow flycatcher opportunities, as well as participation in all of the local working groups. I work directly with all of the ag organizations within our state and keep them updated with funding opportunities and try to get input from those folks as to what they would like to see get done on the ground. In addition, we have our website, and I publish a quarterly news for landowners that outlines, or highlights, I should say, many of our programmatic opportunities, including Habitat Partnership Program et al. So
it looks like one of our participants wants to ask a question, and I'm just going to repeat the instructions. You need to press star 1 on your phone, on your dial pad. And also, to answer another question that was asked, we will have a recording of this entire webinar, as well as each of the presentations that were provided, a copy of those on our website. So you can revisit some of the information as well as some of the contact information in a couple days. And our website is www.tamariscoalition.org. Was someone going to speak?
Yes, Kristen, it was Dawn. I have an answer to the question on who is eligible for WIP. And basically it is it can be non-governmental organizations that have control of the land or any producer or landowner, federal agencies, state and local governments, and any of their political subdivisions or agencies are not eligible. So, and that was for, again, the WIP program.
Great. And so that includes programs such as Working Lands for Wildlife, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, great. So we do have a question from one of our participants. I'm going to ask.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Jody Rice with the State Forest Service. I'm just wondering, from the NRCS representative, can a technical service provider be utilized for all of your NRCS programs or only a select few?
Currently, we can only utilize them with the EQIP and WIP programs. They're also used with CRP, not that it to a limited extent, but for this point in time, that's the three programs that we can use TSPs.
Okay, how about the Basin program? I know you didn't talk about that, but I know of it.
The Basin State Salinity Program?
Yes.
Okay, the Basin State Salinity Program actually is not an NRCS program, although we help support that program with our technical assistance, our staff time. And so with the Basin States program, that's actually with the Colorado State Conservation Board. And at this particular point in time, I do not believe that they offer funds to pay for the conservation planning and design work. They rely on NRCS to provide that planning and technical assistance.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. I don't believe that we have any more questions. So with that, I'm going to conclude our webinar and thank all of our presenters for participating and putting together such informative presentations. Thank you all. for taking the time to, again, participate in our event. Thanks to all of our participants for listening in. And if you have any questions about this webinar, future webinars, or how to get information about our series, you can contact me at kjesperson@tamarisscoalition.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you.